relationship you've got on earth is your siblings. Did you know that? Yeah, I got my height from my granddaddy, my beard from my grandmama. Yeah. Yep. So we're going to talk about that. That's what we're going to. What happened? Everything was looking good, and then it died on me here. Here we go. That's why. So we're going to talk about something very powerful tonight. It's our last one. And so since it's our last one, just grab y'all some and pass them around. Everybody get some. Siblings. Grab one to you, get one to your dad. Thank you. When you get, I went to Walmart last night, checked my eyes. They said, they told me to come back later. That's a bad sign. That's a bad sign. Yeah, well, these allergies get kicking up. I can't see good. I get walking up to people, get right up the top of them before I see them, and they say, why are you so stuck up? I'm sorry, I didn't see you. And the older I get, Linda says, welcome to getting older. She knows just how to encourage you. Amen. That's right. Now, comforting those left behind. Let's go ahead. This has been our anchor, and I'm just going to go through it quickly. You'll hear, I just want to die. Now you're going to have to ask people when they say, I just want to die. You need to ask them. Don't assume. Don't think you got it figured out. If somebody says, I just want to die, what do you do? Y'all have had your training. What do you do if somebody says, I just want to die? Talk to them. That's right. What are you going to say? Here's what you say. Now, you just told me you wanted to die. That's put a red flag up in my head. I need to know, what do you mean? Okay, do you mean you'd really do it, or does it mean that you're just in despair? Because remember, the biggest thing is people don't want to die. They just want the pain to stop. Remember that. And remember, if you're struggling and contemplating taking your own life, then just remember, when I'm in the pain and distress, my salvation, oh God, may your salvation, oh God, protect me. Now remember, you can ask somebody that's struggling and telling you, I just want to die. You can ask them, now what do you mean by I just want to die? Do you really mean you would actually try to take your life? And if they go, oh, no, then just ask them this. Here's a couple of questions. Have you contemplated a way to do it? If they've contemplated a way to do it, they have seriously thought about it. Okay? If they said, no, I never thought about how I would do it. I never thought about this or that and everything. It was just me talking. I just want to die. So here's what you got to do is, when you go and do this, remember, what we say, and this is where we left off last week. But I'll put this back up here because I wanted us to see this, especially if you weren't here last week, it'll give you some continuity. How do you comfort those caught in the aftermath of a suicide? What we say through our actions, and again, I ask, what was our actions? Going there quickly to help them, that's an action. Running from them sometimes is the best action. If you can't do anything good, run. Okay? If you're going to go in there and be some philosopher, or you're going to go in there and try to help them with all your biblical knowledge and going to tear everybody all to pieces, run. I ask God to put some holy duct tape over your mouth, okay? But if you're going to go there with love and with mercy and compassion, and you can honestly say, I don't have an answer. That's the best thing you can say. I don't have an answer, but I know who does, and I'm holding on to his hand. Wow. That's awesome. I don't have an answer. I'm holding on to his hand, but you can believe I'm going to be here with you. All right? So, actions, responses, and we talked about it last week. You know, don't do something like, I've heard some people say, well, that's population control. No. Or, well, I saw it coming. Or joke about it. Yeah, no, you don't do that. And so again, you got to be careful and do something like this. Look. Or don't do that, because these people are hurting, and they're going to think, number one, you're not taking them seriously. Yeah, no, why do they do it for you? They're hurting, and they don't need to hear that. That does not help. That hurts. Plus, it takes you and puts a wall between you and them because they're saying they're not serious about helping me. If they were serious about helping me, they wouldn't be acting like this. Okay? So now, also in your words, watch what you say. And remember, watch this. Words, all these, your actions, your responses, your words can help lead a survivor through to healing or fall deeper into the trap of depression and despair. We need to be aware of this power that our words, our actions, and our responses have. Be aware of all this. And then, watch, never take it lightly. You seen that thing, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me? I remember seeing a cartoon one time that said, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And he was saying that to somebody else. And then turned around, and you saw all the words that person said was written all over it. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, knocks him off the horse. The end, and he hits that. Yeah. Okay. So watch this now. Sympathy says, I'm sorry you hurt. Sympathy, you can be sympathetic from a distance. I'm sympathetic for those guys over in Iran that are being held hostage. I'm sympathetic for those guys that lose their life, get their heads cut off because they say they're Christians. I'm sympathetic about that lady that got jailed because she refused to give marriage license. I'm sympathetic about preachers that are imprisoned over there. I'm sympathetic about kids around here and kids all over the place that go to bed hungry. I'm sympathetic, but sympathetic. You know what? We can be sympathetic and do absolutely nothing. Right? Still you feel, but you're not doing anything. Now watch this, though. Empathy says, I'll hurt with you. Now you're getting in there. Now you've picked up the shovel. Now you got the hammer and nail. Now you're doing something. Now you've climbed in the ring with them. And especially if you see somebody hurting the way you have hurt, you know, it's like because I lost my wife. When I hear guys say they lost their wife, it's like I just hone right into them. It's like it's just something natural. I hone right into them. It's just because I remember the pain, the hurt, the separation anxiety. I remember all that stuff, the survivor's guilt. I remember all that stuff. And how real it was, and how you had to get through it. And so I get with these guys, and before long, I'm asking them these questions, you know, because I just, like I said, I just been there, done that, and want to try to help. Yeah. Oh, how did I get through it? I got through it with him. Absolutely. Laid on my face, prayed, laid on my face. Every day at lunchtime, laid on my face, and I prayed. And I cried before the Lord with his Bible, opened it right in my face. And that's how I did it. And I've told guys that. You know, they go, I had to take all the pictures off the wall and I had to do this. And I said, dude, you're just making it worse. Keep your pictures up. You know, there's going to come a time where they're going to have to be moved around because you're going to remarry and all that. You need to move. So I still have her pictures up, but they're moved around because Linda's pictures are up there in the living room with all of our grandkids. But those other pictures are still up in the house. And the boys know that. No, I haven't hid them. I told them I wouldn't hide them. You know, but again, I know people that have put them in drawers. They've taken them out of the house. They have thrown them away. Even burn them. You know, that's not going to help you heal. All it's going to do is push down hurt. And you don't say that either. Well, you know, well, not only that, but... I never say that. Yeah. I can. That's right. I can understand. Here's what I tell them. I understand. I ask them first. I'll say, help me understand what you're feeling. And I can say, here's what I tell them. I don't know exactly what you're going through, but I can tell you what I went through. And a lot of times, you know, right, start with they're going, yeah, right, yeah. And then when you start talking, they go, yeah. Yeah, and then all of a sudden now you got a conversation going, and you can, there's a lot of healing goes on once they start talking. All right, yes, ma'am. Usually, a crazy person, a real crazy person, somebody that's really crazy doesn't think they're crazy. Yeah, or she might be, yeah. What? You know what you could do? You know what the cool thing is? Watch this. Hi, Crazy. I'm Cookie. Glad to meet you. Because you know what? If you can get them past, you can get them past that. You know what I'm saying? Because I've had people do it to me. I'm such and such, blah, 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 blah. And I just, instead of going, you know better than that, stop that. I just start going, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. That's when to get you checked out. Yeah, that's right. Or you can say, God sure loves crazy people because he made enough of them. Then she says she's pretty crazy, right? So what were you going to say, brother? You were going to say, Stephen, you were going to say something? I thought you were going to say that about a commercial or something. Oh, okay. Okay. But compassion says, I'll stick with you until the hurt is gone. That right there means more to any than somebody than anything. I remember when Beverly died, and I remember there were some of my family members that they hung with me. And I remember sometimes that even I kept thinking, because, see, I'm not used to this. I'm used to being the caretaker. You know, I'm used to being the one that's giving out. And so sometimes it gets hard, it's hard to take it in. But they were there, and my boys were there, and had cousins that were over there and some friends. And then I had some other friends come to me and say, look, we're in the graveyard, the family graveyard. Let's take care of it. Let me take care of this. And somebody else come to me and said, look, I understand that you're going to use parking. So let me and my friends take care of the parking for you. And then Smith IGA, River Smiths, they come and brought me four of those great big old pans, four great big old pans of chicken. I mean, four. There was so much chicken. And then another florist came, and other people, because Beverly's favorite flower was a peace lily. There was peace lilies all over that house. There was four or five pans of chicken. So when people would come to see me out, they'd leave with a piece of chicken and a peace lily. So I didn't know what to do with all of them. Yeah, I think it's because I was a preacher. I mean, he loves chicken. Let's get him some chicken. But still, but all those were acts of compassion. It wasn't just sympathy. You know, sympathy cards are just that, sent from a distance. But when you're right there with them, you got your arm around them, that's empathy. And when you're right there and you stay with them, when all the people have left and you say, I'm here, you can count on me. You know, now that's compassion. And so God's watching and he sees that. And remember, we talked about it Sunday morning. Whatever you dish out is coming back to you. It'll come back to you. All right. Those caught in aftermath. This is the hardest one of all, because the greatest, even though they fight and they fuss, me and my brothers, go ahead, bro.
Something you mentioned a while ago about food loving. Billy Mason run a school right there at Crossroads. And when anyone died in the community, he would send a lot of food to the family. And I have never forgotten what all he had done for me and other people.
Yes, yes, it does. It's to me, it's an amazing thing for somebody to do. And Donnie, which is River Smith's son, daddy is 74. Daddy went there to get some likes or collars and pigtails, and so he went to get some collars and pigtails. And he said, Donnie came up to him, and Donnie said, David Linton, how you doing? Daddy hadn't seen Donnie in 5-6 years or longer. And then he remembered all the family's names, and he said, how's Larry, how's Gary, how's Tammy, and how's that preacher boy of yours? You know, and again, that stuff means something. It means a lot. Yeah, okay. Now, how to address siblings after a suicide. Now, there's many kinds of suicides that a sibling may have to face, maybe a mother, a father, a friend. But the hardest one, I believe, would be, especially in twins, is your sibling. Because, again, the closest person to you on earth, the one that's got your closest DNA, is a sibling. And I have twin brothers, identical twin brothers. And all my life, if I fought one, I had to fight the other. Even when the other one knew I was right, he still would help the other one. And even in this day, there's times they get together. I have no idea they're together. I have no idea where they're going. You know, and that's just that. And they have daughters that favor each other, which is pretty cool too. I got kinfolk over there. Well, bless his heart. I do have some Lintons over there in Roper, in that area. All right, here we go. Now, I wrote a lot of this down. It's on your papers too. But this is, I wrote it on your stuff. I didn't put room for you to take notes because there's so much. Just write on the back of your paper, you're going to take notes. Because I wanted you to get this because you may wind up having to help somebody in this condition. When a child carries out a suicide attempt, friends and family are left emotionally shattered and mentally scattered, not knowing what to do with their feelings or how to make sense of what has happened. The whole family is the same way. It's like they're in a daze. They can't figure out what's going on. It doesn't make sense. You know, it's like what this next thing here says. Many loved ones feel as though they're in a dense fog with no sense of direction and no destination in sight. I've come upon these situations multiple times. I've done it as a chaplain, and I've done it as a pastor, and I've done it as a friend, and being called into these kind of things. And when you go in there, people are just trying to survive. The sad thing is, many times, the parents are trying so hard to survive that they kind of overlook children. I remember when my wife died, honestly, my mother-in-law and sister-in-law act like my boys and Bethany weren't even around. And they had lost their mama. You know, that really hurt me bad. But they were hurting and they didn't know how to handle it, because Barry was 38. They didn't know how to handle it. And so it took a while before they actually came around into helping the children of the... Bethany was 10, Daniel was 17, and DC was 19. Daniel was going to get out of school in December on his 12th grade, and Beverly kept saying, all I want is for those boys to graduate. And sure enough, Daniel came. She died on Thursday. Daniel came on a Wednesday morning. And I was out in the car charging my phone. Both of us have been in intensive care all night. And Daniel said, Dad, he said, I don't know what to do. He said, if I go take my test, I graduate today. And if I don't, I don't know when it'll happen again. I said, I've already called the school. They said, it's fine. You don't have to go today. And he said, no, Dad, you taught me to finish what I started. And he said, Dad, I got to go finish this. And he said, Mom wants to know that I graduated. And they already told she may not make it through Wednesday. And so, no, she died on Thursday. This is on Wednesday. And so Daniel says, I'm going. So I called the school and said, let him take his test rapid fire and then get back. He said, sure. And so Daniel went and took his test. And in just a couple hours, he come back. And he stood over his mama's head. And she was paralyzed, but she could answer with her eyes. And he said, Mama, we made it. I graduated. And that was special, very special. But I let him make the decision, you know, but it was so special for him to be able to tell his mama that. Of course, she died the next day. Okay, but still, and even that puts you in a dense fog. But this right here, when somebody takes their own life, it's kind of like you say, here's the first thing we're going to say is like, what were they thinking? Or really, what could be that bad? Or what was it that was going on, or what did I miss? Because it goes from anger to guilt. Then it goes anger, guilt. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You had a peace of God on you that night.
And you're going to sleep in that bed. You're going to throw the mattress away. I can throw my mattress away. I said, yeah, you crazy.
Now you had that peace that passeth all understanding. Because I made comment of that to my wife when I went back home. I said, Cookie, God's got cookie.
You know, why do people, I remember when I was a little boy, I bet Jeannie remembered the same thing down there. When a person died, they did burn the mattresses and all that stuff. Why did they do that?
They just thought that there was some kind, sometimes they did it contaminated, yeah. Contamination. It's like, sometimes they stop the clock. Sometimes they put, yeah, and if they stop the clock, there's been several things about stopping the clock, but one thing to stop the clock so they know the time of death so the coroner can, and when they got the time of death because they stopped the clock right where the time of death is, then they cover up the mirrors because they said they don't want the spirit to see themselves when they're rising. They did. Right. My mama died at home, and I have to say it was very peaceful. And when she died, because that morning, I had talked to her before we went back home. We spent the night with her, and she hadn't talked to anybody for a couple of days, and I talked to her. And I realized that she was waiting for me to tell her it was okay, because everybody's been telling her for months. She's waiting for me to tell her, and so I finally told her. Yeah, right. So I finally told her, and when I told her it's okay, Mama, you go ahead. It was just a couple hours, but when we got back, of course, then we had to wait for Gary to come from Raleigh and let him see Mama before they took her off, and so. I was just a kid, went to funeral home. The false funeral home come, put the hearse up in the front yard. And I said, I cannot believe you sent that little Chevrolet. A Chevrolet in a Dodge yard. And I said, do me a favor. He said, well, I said, I want you to park that in the back for people to get the wrong idea about us. And they went and parked the hearse in the backyard. but I remember the pain. And I remember I sat in the house right now. And I sat sometimes right where mama, her bed was. And I sat there sometimes and think about her, you know, and knowing mama wouldn't hurt me. Now, when I was little, stuff like that scared me to death, but I know mama wouldn't hurt me. And being around like nurses and doctors and people in a rest home and people that work with geriatrics, that they're so used to being around death that although it hurts because of the personal ties, you've worked through death enough that it helps. You know what I'm saying? It's like just about everybody that has died that I've pastored, just about everybody I've helped the funeral home load them up. You know, and I think it's an honor. It's an honor for me.
I know I'm a lot older than you are, but I can still remember when I was little boy, when a person died, they'd done it all at their home.
Mm-hmm.
And they were set up with a bed for two or three nights. And I tell you what, I mean, I know I really got scared one time.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Humps, that was third of us. He died and he ate a whole bunch of great big butter beans before he died.
Wow.
A French friend of mine who I was with watching this weekend, she was kind of restless the night she passed away. The daughter said she went into bed and said her daddy mama was holding his hand to sleep.
Did she die?
He finally went to bed, but he came back. check on you. You said he has something she was holding hands in the one she loved, but you believe.
And hold the hands of the one. That's awesome. That is awesome. That's awesome. Well, the depth and degree and duration of the impact on your remaining children and how you deal with them will vary per child based on individual temperament, age, and maturity. I remember as a little boy, I had an aunt die that we were kind of close, but not like close, but kind of close. And I remember when she died, I couldn't stop crying. Every time we were around the house, I just couldn't stop crying. But that was one of those, as you're growing up, one of those, you're getting those emotional. And I was one of those emotional things. And my cousin kept coming in and saying, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. And I said, I know, I just can't stop crying. But again, that's part of the maturity, temperament, individual temperament, age, and maturity. All right. Now, remember, everybody grieves different. Don't ever tell a person how to grieve. You can lead them through grief, but you cannot tell them how to grieve. There's a difference. If I say, okay, you got to do step 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, I can tell you how to stop having anxiety attacks. And I can lead you through the steps to keep from anxiety attacks. I can tell you pretty much how to do it without medicine. I can walk you through it. I can't walk you through grieving. I can't tell you how. I can walk with you. I can explain it and tell you expect what you are to expect. And then let you know that you're human and that you're not crazy. You know. So now, here we go. Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's a while. It is. Sometimes it may take. It took me years before I grieved Beverly's death. I was too busy helping everybody else. Well, you. Oh yeah. Okay. There's. Here you go. Watch this. There are some common clues to look for, identify, and resolve as you seek to help your children or other children become overcomers. Some of the feelings they may experience. This and that. It doesn't have, and this doesn't have to be a child, but I'm talking about this could be, this is somebody, I would say, somebody 5, 6, 7 years old on up in their teens is what we're talking about. Because, you know, if you get up in the 20s, you're back to the way the adults do it. But this is usually a teenager, they haven't had a chance to experience death too much. And if they have experienced death, it's still not like a person that's in their 30s. Everybody in here has had a chance to experience death on a close level many times over. Okay, if you're part of a church, many, many, many times over. And if you're ministering to people like a nursing home, whatever, you've got a chance. And so these guys haven't. So here's what you got to look for. And it's all similar to what we did with the adults. But I want you to watch this because this, I just got a feeling that one of y'all pretty soon are going to need this stuff. And you're going to say, I'm so glad that I took time to study this. All right, here we go. And if I'm on my deathbed, make sure you don't feed me beans. Okay. All right, ready? After what he just said, all right, ready? The first thing you're going to feel is anger. Anger at the sibling. At the sibling for leaving with the living one is going to be angry at the one that died. Because they left without saying goodbye or taking them with them. Or without talking with them about it. And they're angry at God for allowing it. And they're angry at the parent and even their self for causing it. They may say, if you hadn't been so hard on my brother, if you had let my brother go to the fair, or if you'd have let my sister go to that prom, or if you'd have let them do whatever, then they wouldn't have killed themselves, so it's your fault. and even their own self. Well, we hadn't been fighting last week. We fought the hardest we've ever fought. Now they're dead. It's my fault. So remember that there's a lot of anger, and it's spread around. It's not. And you, matter of fact, you can even ask them, if you can tell they're looking angry, here's what you ask them. Who are you angry at? And here's what they're going to tell you. Nobody. And then you say, no. They're scared to tell you. And you go, no. Let me hear. Who are you angry at? I know you're angry. And I've done that with people before. And I'll say, I bet you're angry at God. And they'll go. Because they're scared to admit they're angry at God. And here's why I tell them. God already knows it. You're not telling him. He already knows it. You're just telling me. And I said, it's okay to be angry at God. He's got big shoulders. He can handle it. So now, who are you angry at? And I even make suggestions. Are you angry at your parents? Are you angry at yourself? The two biggies are angry at yourself and angry at God. Rejection. If you're rejected because of siblings not wanting to be with them or value them enough to stay here and live with them, that's heavy. So now that they're angry, they feel rejected, and it don't have to be in this order, but usually anger is one of the first ones. That's part of the shock and fear of being alone in their bedroom or playroom at night because something or someone in the darkness may hurt them. Yeah, you know, before the death, it was like the booger man was going to hurt them. And now, death, yeah. And fear that their sibling might be punished by God for all eternity. That's when you have to tell them that just because they killed themselves does not mean they're in hell. You got to tell them that. You got to tell people that, okay? Because, and do not walk up and say, well, you know, they chose their own place and they're burning. I know, because that right there is wrong, because you don't know where they're at. I believe we have a merciful God, and if they were right with God, especially a child, I can tell you where a child's at. A child's with God. An adult, if they were a Christian, I believe they're with God. Now, I done a funeral. I can't remember who I did the funeral for, but I was coming. I always ride at the funeral. I always ride at the graveside, or most of the time, unless it's by the house. I ride at the graveside with the funeral director, because three reasons. Number one, saves gas. No, I'm kidding. I'm playing about that. I'm playing. And number one is because I'm already at the front of the line. Because they always want us there first. So my job as pastor, I need to be to the graveside before the pallbearers get there. Matter of fact, I meet them at the coach and I walk them to the grave. So I need to be up there in front. And so if I ride with them, I know I'm going to be up at front. And sometimes I'm trying to think of trying to work out the final stuff. And so if I'm not driving, I don't have to worry about it. I can work it out while I'm riding with them. Well, we'd come out from a funeral, and somebody had just done something real crazy at a funeral. And this happened here in Beaufort County. And it happened a couple of years ago. There was a young man who got killed in a car wreck. And he was a teenager. He got killed in a car wreck. And he had been playing with his friends, and they had been messing around and been drinking and carrying on. And the preacher stood at the foot. It was a graveside service. And the preacher stood at the foot of the coffin and said, I just want all y'all to know, and this is no lie, what he said. It was a lie what he said, but it was no lie what he said. He said, I want y'all to know that he is burning in hell as we speak. Horrible thing to do. And he said, but he's serving as an example for the rest of y'all so that y'all don't have to die crazy and burn in hell. And the father stood up and went to him and said, I think you need to leave. At the funeral. Good for him. I said the same thing. The preacher told everybody that the boy was burning in hell and said that he was serving as an example so the other ones wouldn't die and go to hell. And the daddy walked up to him and said, I think you need to leave. And I told the funeral director, I said, he was mighty gracious, very gracious, just to say you need to leave, you know, because I would have helped him. I would have helped him leave. You know. I cannot believe somebody would do something like that. But that's, there goes again where we judge. We're not the judge. Jesus is the judge, not us. Okay, so now, here we go. Sadness over the loss of a cherished confidant and a constant companion, a constant playmate, a constant cheerleader. Sadness over that loss. Confusion about why their brother or sister would choose suicide and whether they're destined or they're destined to commit suicide too, because people have a tendency to think, well, if somebody committed suicide in my family, I'm going to do it too. Or should I follow their example? A lot of times if it's the parent, or well, I won't say a lot of times, but many times if the parent commits suicide, a child will do it because they're trying to be like, Eddie, I'm not sure where they're at. You got one? The parent is trying to be, they're trying to be like their parent and following the example of their parent. And so you got to be careful because let them know that they don't have to do the same thing. They don't have to fall prey to the same thing. Guilt, that they may be somehow responsible for their siblings being unhappy and despondent enough to want to die rather than live with them. This is heavy stuff. I mean, it's one thing if it's your spouse, but you didn't grow up, even if you grew up with your spouse, you didn't grow up with them like a sibling. Right. I mean, a sibling is a sibling. There's no other relationship on this earth like a sibling. No other. Hopeless about facing the future without their sibling to help them, to spend time with them, to teach them the ropes, to understand them. And alone. Without the only family member that they can truly relate to, play with, confide in, tell secrets to, look to for security, advice, and guidance. Again, when you're mad at mama or you're mad at daddy, who do you go to? Your siblings. Not DC. Larry and Gary and I sometimes would fight like rabid dogs. And mama would put us in there. And one thing I hated for her to do, she come try to whip me one time. I was a teenager and I put my knee pads in the back of my pants. She would beat me. And she whipped my knee pads and she said, what's that sound? And she reached back there and saw my knee pads in my back of my pants. And she said, boy. And she pulled them out. And she said, I got you next time. Next time she didn't whip me. Next time she made me go to bed. And my mama was smart because we go in the bedroom. Me and my brothers who've been fighting, we go in that bedroom and we would, and we'd sit there and we'd be so mad we wouldn't talk to each other. We'd argue a little bit and I'd go, shh, shh. And then eventually I'd go, I'm sorry. And they go, I'm sorry too. And they go, you think mama will let us out? We would get better sitting in there. But you know what? There's nobody else. Although I don't get a chance to spend time with my brothers like I used to or my sister, there's nobody on earth that has shared these experiences with me like they have. Or butter beans. I had to go pick it. Oh, my daddy. Mama let us guard. Mama let us guard ourselves because I've still got a print on my hand from a fork where I was reaching in trying to grab some French fries for my brother and he stabbed me with his fork. I've also got a scar on my foot where we used to play chicken and we put our feet far apart and throw a knife and you had to pull your foot to the knife. And we were playing, and we got really, really close. And of course, I don't know whether I was just always the better shot or they just enjoyed hitting my foot. But one time they hurt me. Yeah, they hurt me pretty bad one time. But, oh, yeah, you could wear shoes. It didn't matter, that sharp knife. All right, helping siblings left behind again. Here we go. Get ready. We're almost through with this. Praise God. Look, I was going to ask y'all too. Hold on. I'm going to write it down. I want to ask y'all. Hold on. Hold on. Let's see here. I got to get this out of the way. Get this out of the way. Bringing in the sheep. Hold on. Here it is. Let's see here. I was going to ask you, I was just looking through some stuff and I saw three things. I know y'all want to talk about last days too, and we can do that. But I was also, it's happening so fast right now that, and that blood moon, how many saw the blood moon? Yeah. The pictures were better on television. We wind up coming back in after the moon because we kept seeing clouds. And so we went in the house and looked at NASA channel, and then the NASA channel, I couldn't believe it. Out of all those feeds they had a one feed that was showing clouds. I'm thinking, come on, people, you're NASA. Out of all people, y'all should be able to show us something without clouds. Oh, yeah, it was real weird. Oh, yeah. All right, here's three things, because these are three things also that let's see here, three things that are beneficial to us right now. But there's three of them. Number one, and if y'all don't want any of them, that's fine. I'm just trying to get some ideas here. Cults. C-U-L-T-S. Not a cult. A cult we know to stay away from. They're the witches and the warlocks and all that. But the cults, it could be like anybody that makes somebody else God. Like just like Jim Jones, David Koresh, the Mormons, Jehovah's Witness, and stuff like that. Okay, well, there's cults. I can start that up next week if you want. There's also one that I see a lot, and people sometimes don't even realize they have it. I see myself with it. It gets me so angry when I catch myself caught in a trap. And that's a critical spirit. There's more. Yeah, a critical spirit. And then there's one more, and that goes along with this, and that's grief recovery. Now, y'all think about it, but I just, you don't have to be one of those three, but that's just three. As I was pondering and studying, I said, well, that's three things that really hit today is the cults and the critical spirit. People honestly sometimes don't even, they can sense it on somebody else, but they can't sense it on themselves. Yeah, and then grief recovery. So, all right, just right now, because y'all are the main ones, how many? All right, I'm going to give you all three of them, and I'll do critical spirit first, but y'all raise your hand. We'll see what we're doing next week. I want the critical spirit. Don't be critical now. What's that, three? Is that three critical spirit? All right, cults, one. All right, and then grief recovery. Neither one. Y'all don't care about either one of them? That's fine. That's fine. Oh, you like them all? So okay, then what we'll do is it look like the critical spirit will be number one. How about that? Is that okay? And this day and time, do you know if you can pick a critical spirit out of somebody else and learn how to get around it, you'll get along better with them. And also when you can spot it on yourself, you'll make yourself a person a little bit more easy to be talked to and to talk and to lead. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, oh, yeah. I know what you're saying, because it's actually discerning of spirits. And, well, I usually can look at somebody and tell if it's going to be a bad day to talk to them. Matter of fact, when I was at a fountain, unless I actually had to go to the person, I look at it and I'm going, they go, let's go talk to them now. And I go, no, now's not a good time. And they'll go, oh, come on. And I go, trust me, it's not a good day. Yeah, that we need to, y'all need to wait a minute. Yeah, you know. Or then I'd go up and say, let's go now. And they go, we're scared to go now. And I go, no, now's the time. And they go, well, how do you know? I said, well, I just, no. No. I can't tell you for sure, but I can tell you this, that I feel all the green lights popping up. Let's go. Okay, here we go. Typically, children lack the skills to clearly express their emotional reactions to traumatic events. That's why we're going to do this right here. Now, when I counsel children, I very seldom use all words. I use puzzles, and I use paper, and I use crayons, and I use paint. And I'm getting ready to do something called an emotion tray, where it's a tray by like this. It's 2 foot by 3 foot, and it's 3 inches deep, and it's going to have sand. It's actually called, some call it a sand tray, some call it a therapy tray, some call it an emotional tray. And you put it in there, and I tell them, and I have all this stuff right where they can get to it. And I say, show me. And I won't use a litter box. Yeah, I can see it now. I know. I was going to say, I want y'all to build me a city. If they use the litter box, I'm going to say, what's that? They go, we didn't put that there. But you know, it's like, just for an example, there was a counselor that took the tray and used it with somebody that was like 11 years old and said, build me your world. And this girl had gone, her mom and daddy had gone through a divorce. And her mama, she was staying with her mama, but her mama had a boyfriend, and her mama was going to college, and her mama spent very little time with her. And so they actually, when she built the little city, what comes with, if you buy the kit, there's all kinds of kits out there. They can cost up to $1,000 for the kit. Okay. But when you get the kit, a decent kit's going to have stuff in it like crosses and coffins and all kinds of people. And this girl put coffins down the center. And she put daddy and his girlfriend pointing that way, her face that way. Their face that way. And mom and her boyfriend, she had a graduation gown on, and they were pointing them. And mama was leaning forward. And the girl was turned around with her back that way. And what she was trying to say is, nobody in my family has time for me. That divorce was a death. They've killed our family. Yeah, yeah. But see, youngins do that. They don't realize what they're doing. But see, they can't talk it, but they can do it. Yep. Exactly. That's right. And so I tell parents all the time, I had a little kid one time that mama said, can you please help me? I don't understand what's going on. And this was years ago. And I took the little kid and you wouldn't know any of them, but I took the little kid and I said, show me what you think. Show me your family. And when he got through, I noticed mama was real small. Daddy was real big. Mama didn't even have a mouth. And mama had mean, and daddy was smiling, and there was other siblings. And so I said, let's talk about this picture. I said, who was this and this, this? And I didn't really ask a whole lot about Mama and Daddy. I let him just tell me. But I said, why do you have no mouth on your mama? And he says, because I honestly don't want to hear her speak because she's so angry. And then I said, well, who's these kids right here? And he said, that's my brother and sister. And when he went through all this stuff, and I got back to the mama, and she said, well, what'd you find out? I said, do you really want to know? And she said, okay. I said, how many brothers and sisters does he have? And she said, well, he's got a brother and sister. I said, you didn't tell me that. He's angry because he can't be with them. And I said, I've noticed y'all's interaction. I've noticed you scream at him. I've seen you do it. Scream. I don't mean like, get in here, son. I mean scream. And she said, when you do that, you shut him right down. He don't want to hear it anymore. And she said, well, I noticed that when I scream, he does kind of, go into a shell. And I took that one little picture and said, his hero's his dad. And went on down the line with it. And so again, kids, you have to do it different with them. It has to be different. They can express through art. They can express through doodling. They can express through crayons. And this little sand tray is going to be another arsenal to help the kids get in there. But they will draw what they're feeling. And then you have to have discernment to be able to do it.
And the same way, people don't realize how smart animals are.
Oh, I know.
Today I saw a sad thing right there in front of my King Chicken. There was a little kitten right in the center of the road, and it was raining, and you could tell it was soaking wet. I dodged the kitten, but there was a Volkswagen right behind me. You know what it does?
I had a dog from England. A friend of mine was in the Air Force, and it was a part Border Collie, part English Shepherd. Smartest dog I'd ever seen in my life. That dog could actually talk. I backed up on it one day, and it said, good land, it did. And the Sunday school superintendent heard it. He said, did that dog just say good land? I said, yeah, he said good land. And then he told his wife, but he changed it. He told his wife that the dog said stupid man. And then one day the dog was chasing the cat across the church parking lot, and I kept saying, Sarah, stop, Sarah, stop, Sarah, you're going to get hurt. Stop, Sarah. And she was just a running, and finally she tripped. She tripped on the rocks and slid all the way across the rocks for a good little ways and stopped at the cement. And I said, how'd that feel, huh? Tell me, how'd that feel? She said, rough. Okay, here we go. That's amazing to hear those dogs do that. Yep. There was one guy went outside. Dogs, everybody wants to be encouraged, especially dogs. And the guy went out one day to get his paper, and the neighbor's dog was sitting up there with the paper in his mouth doing like this. And so he said, stay right there. And he went and got him a treat, took his paper and got him a treat. The next morning, the dog was back with all the neighbor's papers. All right. Ask questions that will aid children in clarifying and communicating their feelings. And remember, part of it, they don't know how to express. Other parts, they're scared to express. They're scared to say how they feel. So they've got to feel safe. Listen intently to them, mirror their feelings back to them, validating them, comforting them, extending hope and encouragement to them. In other words, if they tell you, I am feeling so, so sad. And you go, I'm feeling sad too. And it's okay. It's all right. Or they're going, I'm so angry. It's okay if you tell them, yeah, I'm angry too. I don't know if y'all, I happened to see that. I didn't really, at the time, I heard it, but I didn't hear it like I did when I watched it. Y'all told me you saw the funeral on the TV for that detention officer. And the pastor said, some of y'all are angry today. And he says, I'm angry too. He said, not at God, but at death. And I thought that was an awesome way to express that. Because there was a lot of people that were angry over that. Respond to their questions and needs by attempting to answer and meet them in practical, meaningful ways. Again, you're talking to a child. Don't go up to them and they go, I don't believe. And you go, have you got the audacity to doubt my veracity? They go, huh? If they say, I don't trust you or something, say, well, one day you will, or maybe later. You got to build trust with them. They got to feel safe. Spend more time with your children. Here's the problem. During something like this, you wind up, the other living children get pushed aside. I remember there was an episode of, it was one of the lost episodes of Bonanza, and it was on this week, and I thought, wow, on Saturday night, and I'm thinking, wow. And of all times, just to be on television. But Hoss got it with the man, got with the family because he was sort of getting their horses, and he had to be with them for a few days. And the guy was just drinking. He just kept drinking. He found out that he had been responsible for his oldest son's death years before. And for 2 or 3 years, he hadn't been a father to the rest of his other two children, or a husband to his wife. And they really started taking the Hoss. And Hoss finally told him, said, dude, you got, he didn't say dude, but he said, you know, said, you're going to have to take responsibility. You're so stuck on the inside. You don't realize, yeah, your son's dead, but you can't do a thing about that, but you got something else living that needs you. You know, you got to spend that time with those kids. Well, back in my day, that was another whooping. My mom would put my words back. She'd say, they're going back in your mouth, son. And I go, what? In this day and time, especially with social services, that they can get you in big trouble. Yeah. And you've done nothing. And they can get you all kinds of trouble. And so some people I've seen people that actually were scared to discipline their children because of an interaction with social services before. Yeah. And so you gotta be careful. Pay attention to any change in their mood, their patterns of eating or sleeping. If they're a big heavy sleeper and all of a sudden they're not sleeping at all, if they're a big eater, now they're not eating, or they were a petite eater, now they're eating everything in house and home. Watch how they study. Were they good students now they're bad students? Watch how they play and socialize. Watch all this stuff. Pay attention to all this stuff, because that's signs that these youngins might need some help. Realize your children are most vulnerable to suicide during the days and months after the death of their sibling, and future anniversary dates such as the deceased child's birthday or the suicide date. I know DC and Daniel, they always seem to be kind of in a little daze, for not as much as it used to be, but their mother's birthday was in July, July 10th. And around July, a couple weeks before her birthday and a week or so after, I know, I can tell. I can look at them and tell. And I can tell they're healing, because usually on July 10th, I'll send them a text in the morning and ask them how they're doing. Well, I was so busy that I even forgot that it was July 10th. And so Linda reminded me. She said, you know what today is? And I know I was ill. I mean, why am I so ill? And because it's July 10th today, that'll be her birthday. And so I happened to text the boys later that day and ask them how were they doing. And DC said, fine, what's up? And I said, it's July 10th. He went, oh. He said, I kept wondering why I felt so weird all day. And he said, and I've been emotional, and I'm trying to figure out why. It's because although you don't remember it consciously, you'll remember it subconsciously. The dogs. My dogs wake me up at 6:30 every morning. They want food. On Saturday mornings, they go to my bed, side of the bed. I'm on one side of the bed. Linda's on this side of the bed. On Monday through Friday, they go to her side of the bed. On Saturday and Sunday, they come to my side of the bed. They don't even have a calendar. And the other day, we had to leave because somebody was in the hospital. We normally feed them at 6:30 at night. I fed them at 5 o'clock or maybe quarter to 5. The next morning, they woke me up at 5:40 on Saturday morning. And I said, what is wrong with their clock? Something knocked their clock off. And then I realized I had fed them at 5 o'clock or quarter to 5 on Friday. Linda said, don't do that again. And men, what do we say? Yes, ma'am. Okay. So, provide professional counseling. If your children should show signs that depression or stress is impairing their level of functioning, seek professional help. Don't think it's crazy. Don't think they're crazy. And definitely don't think that people are going to look. Well, what kind of people are people going to think about me if my child's in counseling? Number one, if your child's in counseling, number one, nobody's going to know about it unless you tell them. Because the counselor's not going to tell. He won't. They won't. And it's amazing to me, when Bethany turned 18, I was talking to the counselor, had Bethany going to the counselor because she was getting ready for all these, had all these surgeries and all this stuff. And Bethany was going to his counselors, and at 17, we would talk about the session. When she turned 18, I went in and talked to him, and he said, I'm sorry. And I said, whoa, we've been talking about this now for 3 years. What do you mean I'm sorry? I said, she's 18 now. I said, she'll only tell you what she wants you to know. And I said, thank you. Even though I was paying the bill, that's right. Provide professional counseling for your children. And professional counseling doesn't necessarily have to cost you. If you got like pastoral counseling, that doesn't cost. You can get pastoral counseling, especially if it's your pastor, try it. And if it's over the pastor's head, he will get you somewhere else. Okay? That football player that I talked about Sunday, that football player in Rocky Mount, he's working on his doctorate. And his major is, seems like my major is always in stress or grief. But his major is in substance abuse. And so, again, if we find somebody in substance abuse, we've got another avenue now. Plus, he still holds the record for the most touchdowns at ECU in a single game and overall, which is pretty cool. Pray for and with your children. Read the Bible with them. Work through the daily devotional book, seeing yourself through God's eyes with them. And that's one of them, seeing yourself through God's eyes. What I discovered with the boys when I was younger, as a young parent, I was trying to just take some kind of, you know, handfuls on purpose or some devotionals that were for adults. And I was trying to read it to them every night. And they're kind of going. And so then I got a little child Bible storybook. And man, you know, so get on their level. You got to get on their level. And never stand over them when you're trying to get questions answered. Get down on your knees beside them, get eye level, or even look up at them. If you're up over top of them, you're a threat. All right? Children have to feel comfortable. As you seek to yield yourself and your children into the Lord's strong, healing hands, and as you keep your heart fully committed to Him, be assured that the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to Him. 2 Chronicles 16:19. Use this information. Number one, to save a life. And if it's too late for that person, but there's another one you know, use it to help rebuild another one. Whatever, don't just lay around. Do something. And remember, you don't have to have all the answers. You just need to be sympathetic, empathetic, and have compassion. And be there. That's right. So if you're there, it's amazing. Any comments, any questions, anything, anybody? But at least go talk to them and do this. Tell them things like, I know you're hurting, and I don't know what to say, but I'm here. And they'll start asking questions, and when they do, again, when they start asking things like, well, did they die and go to hell? Number one thing is, you say, God is judge, not me. God knew their heart, and they're in God's hands, and nothing shall separate us from the love of God. So that's with God. They're with God now. Let him do it. You know, and when you do things like that, again, you don't have all, and you tell them. I tell them all the time, I don't have all the answers. I don't have them. If I had all the answers, I'd write a book about it. I don't have all the answers. But I do know somebody who does. I love it. It's one of my favorite things. It's like that day when you asked me how I was doing. I said, I'm doing great in faith. Through faith, I'm doing great. That's right. I did feel really bad. But I was in faith. I was feeling okay. I mean, I was believing God for something special. Now, next week then, we'll talk about, what was it we were going to talk about? Critical spirit. But again, go out and use these. Tell someone, and if there's any part of this that you didn't get, because I know she didn't get all of hers. Did you get everything? Did Eddie give it to you? Did you get her everything, Eddie? Jeannie? Yeah, I probably saw it and looked down at it, and I got in a hurry. And yeah, you probably did. I know you did something like that. But see, every day, because the mighty army, I have to clear my text messages out every day. Because once I send mighty army, I have 500 text messages on my phone. Well, the data plan is unlimited, but I'll do it when I'm on Wi-Fi, but oh, your memory, yes, memory, yeah. So it's 500, so I have to delete them, and I mean, during the average week, I'll have two or three people join Mighty Army. They'll say, "Can you please add me?" Or, "Here's my friend, can you add them?" And now I bet I've got 30 people on Mighty Army. I have no idea who they are. I've just got Mighty Army 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 A, B, C, D. You know, I have no idea. Finally, somebody had sent me, said, "Can you please?" Last week, said, "Can you please add me to Mighty Army?" Sure. And they said, "You know who this is?" And I said, "Right when you sent me your, I couldn't remember your phone. It didn't show up as your phone number. That's why I asked, who is this?" You know, it's because, you know, when somebody sends you something. Last night, I get a phone call. I'm talking to DC or somebody, and I get a phone call, and the phone call is a 910 number, and so that's up. Other side of Raleigh, yeah, and so or in Jacksonville area, yeah, and so I didn't answer it, and then when I get home, I listen to the voice message, and the voice message says, "Hey, how about call me? I'll be up all night." And I said, "Who is this? And do I need to know who it is that's going to be up all night?" And so then the phone rings again about an hour later with that same number, and it was the guy whose mama lives in Bayburg. He was raised in Bayburg, Stanley Griffin, but his voice didn't sound like him on my answering machine, and he's a prison guard, so he's up all night. So I'm going, okay, now I got you. Now I understand. Yeah. Yeah, because you can't tell if somebody has a cheap phone. If they've got a cheap phone, it's like, "Hi, David, how you doing?" Yeah. Oh, I have. Now, the funniest, I think I told you this, the funniest thing was somebody told me, said, "Are you going to UNC next week?" I said, "Sure." while you're up there, can you go see my uncle Fred? I said, sure. Where's he at? He's in room 2146. I said, all right. And so I'm up at UNC, and this is while I was pastoring at Benson, and I go up there to 2146. I'm in there, and I told him, hey, man, your nephew sent me up here. He said, okay. And we were talking back and forth, and we've been talking for 15, 20 minutes. And I said, well, Fred Jr. said to tell you hello. He said, who's Fred Jr.? And I didn't write down the man's name, so I didn't know who he was. And I said, aren't you Fred Jr.'s uncle? He says, who's Fred Jr.? And I said, do you know anybody from Benson named Fred? He says, like a brother? He goes, no. He said, I'm from Rocky Mountain or something. And I went, oh. He said, but thank you for the visit. I had a good time. I have no idea who I visited, and I've done it on several occasions. And you're not getting it all now? I had somebody. Well, what it is, what I try to do is I try to give spiritual points without being spiritual. And think about this. And Sunday, because I was preaching on Do Something, I put on Mighty Army, Texas proverb, don't squat with your spurs on. Okay. Oh, yeah, he sent me a fortune cookie, and I put it up. Oh, people send me stuff all the time, and I use it. Anytime y'all got one, send it to me, because I'll use it. Yes, ma'am. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, if the government's got anything to do with it, the Apple phone's got a worm in it. Did you hear what I said, Cookie? If the government's giving out Apple phones, I'm pretty sure they got a worm in it.
Yeah, there was a few things that they got.